Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. You haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. And right now we're up to episodes 25 and sort of 26 of season 7. It's called All Good Things, the series finale. No more TNG after this. Directed by Weinrich Kolbe, written by Brandon Braga and Ron D. Moore, and it aired back on May 23rd, 1994. The plot of this one involves Captain Picard jumping through time and the formation of an anomaly that defies causality. The whole situation being a test that allows Picard to demonstrate human potential to the Q continuum. Clay and Modi are here to talk about this. And we're going to go deep on All Good Things, talk about it for about an hour, talk about the show a little bit more broader terms and things like that. But anyway, that's it. TNG is over. It's been over 2 years, but we're finally done. And we'll be moving on to other things after this. We'll talk about that in this podcast and the podcast coming up. But anyway, guys, it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed the process very much. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much for following along the entire series of TNG. And now, with that said, all good things must come to an end.
The Continuum didn't think you had it in you, Jean-Luc. But I knew you did.
You're saying that it worked. We collapsed the anomaly.
Is that all this meant to you? Just another spatial anomaly, just another day at the office.
Did it work?
Well, you're here, aren't you? You're talking to me, aren't you?
What about my crew?
The anomaly, my ship, my crew. I suppose you're worried about your fish, too. Well, if it puts your mind at ease, you've saved humanity once again.
Thank you.
For what?
You had a hand in helping me get out of this.
I was the one that got you into it. A directive from the Continuum. The part about the helping hand, though, was my idea.
I sincerely hope that this is the last time that I find myself here.
You just don't get it, do you, Jean-Luc? The trial never ends. We wanted to see if you had the ability to expand your mind and your horizons. And for one brief moment, you did.
When I realized the paradox.
Exactly. For that one fraction of a second, you were open to options you had never considered. That is the exploration that awaits you. Not mapping stars and studying nebula, but charting the unknown possibilities of existence.
Q, what is it that you're trying to tell me?
You'll find out. In any case, I'll be watching. And if you're very lucky, I'll drop by to say hello from time to time. See you out there.
Clay, as I finished this one, the only thing that popped into my head was the Queen song from Highlander, "Here We Are, Masters of the Universe," as we stand on the defeated ruins of Star Trek The Next Generation. Modi, Clay, how are you guys? Welcome to the finale. Welcome to each other. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to All Good Things.
First thing I'd like to point out is it's Princes of the Universe, as you should know, since we covered two fucking Highlander movies.
Oh, sorry. I just think of He-Man. He's Master of the Universe. Right?
Second of all, the first thing I thought was that Boys to Men song, "It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday," parentheses, you're approaching it from three different timelines due to a paradox created by a tachyon pulse from three different timelines.
Oh, Boys to Men. They didn't get the credit they deserved.
No. Huge nerds.
So... guys, we've been doing this for over 2 years. Is that shocking?
Really? Oh, my God. Yeah, no, that's crazy.
That's shocking.
It's been 2 years.
Holy crap.
Oh, God.
I think. I'm going to check that as I do this. But, like,
I don't know. Like, I'm a little bit surprised it took this long, a little bit not surprised it took this long, but...
Any faster, and I think you probably would have died inside a little bit.
Maybe. The first episode went up August 9th, 2014.
Woof.
Wow.
Wow.
That was a whole different era. That was a post 9/11 but pre 2016 world.
yes,
there's quite a few years that you could describe that way. Yeah.
The you guys were both from the beginning. Modi, your first episode was Justice. Clay, your first one was Angel One. Mm. Which you recorded with our friend Sean Cordy. Mm-hmm. Sean hasn't been back, unfortunately.
Hated it so much he never came back.
I haven't spoken to him since August 12th. 2014. But here we stand at the end of it, all good things after a lackluster season 7, right? And Clay, why don't you start us off? Why don't you tell us your big reveal about this episode, how you think about this one?
Well, you know, you say lackluster season 7. I can only assume that it was because they were putting all their chips behind this episode, because this is not only, for me, the best episode of the season. This is probably my favorite Star Trek episode. I think it's the best series finale I've ever seen. And the reason I think that is because it really does what a lot of finales try to do but end up failing at. Because, you know, there's different things that you want to try and hit when you get to a series finale. You kind of want to look back, and then you get something like the Seinfeld episode where it's a clip show, basically. Or you want to look forward, where you do kind of like the Parks and Rec thing, where they kind of jump forward a couple years in the future and show, you know, where everybody is. But you also want to try and be true to the show as it's existed for the past, you know, however many seasons. And they managed to do that, all of those things at the same time, and pretty much nail it. All within the confines and the ideas that they set up in the show. So, like, it doesn't feel like they're cheating at all, you know? They're using all of these different methods to do all of those things at once, and it works really, really well.
I wanted to talk a little bit before we get into Star Trek. You kind of went down the path. What makes a good series finale? You kind of said a couple of the things. I think you said that looking ahead. I think you have to be careful that you can't look too far ahead in a series finale. Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple things that have to go on in season finales. Like, you have to – I personally like a slight bit of vagueness. I hate it when everything is wrapped up in a finale where it feels like they're just trying to wrap things up at that last moment to get everything done.
Unless it's a clean ending to the story. You know, if they're going to end the story, that's fine. Is if they do it cleanly, but a lot of times they do that and it feels like they're just, you know,
right,
rushing
like
to wrap stuff up.
If it's a murder mystery, I need to know who killed who, you know, like,
right. No loose ends there.
So, yeah. Modi, what do you think? Any traits you look for in a finale?
This wraps it up nicely, like you just described. I mean, this leaves it open ended enough that you can kind of invent your own stories for them after the fact. You can kind of see, you saw a glimpse of where things could have gone, but they mentioned in the show that it's not necessarily the timeline that they're on still.
Yeah.
So that leaves it nicely open-ended that you can kind of invent your own stories after the fact and create several movies and that kind of thing. But it to back to the just original question of the finale as a finale, it works very well because it really balances nostalgia and a really good plot also. I mean, it's not lacking either dimension. It does the right callbacks, doesn't do it too much. It's got fan service in it with like the Yar coming back and that kind of thing. But
I don't know if that's fan service. With, that's just the mark of
maybe that's what it is too. But
mark of a
classic. It's got the nostalgia there that ties the whole thing together. It calls back to just even episode 1, which I wouldn't have thought that was going to be anything later on in the show. I mean, yes, Q pops up frequently, but it never seemed like, you know, that was the entire thing. Was episode 1 was the beginning of it all, kind of thing. Like,
Sorry, I just wanted to say they do stuff that they laid out in the pilot. That's amazing, and it doesn't feel forced at all.
Nope.
I think that's because I don't want to. I kind of wanted the discussion to kind of go along the lines of like why I think this is like an excellent episode. I think it's probably one of the best ones that the series ever did, and it does it in a weird way that's very finale based. Like, to me, People hate it. I actually, if you guys want to think about like a good and bad finale, like I really love the finale to Deadwood, right? Which is apparently kind of controversial because
yeah, that's not really a finale on that show though, because it got canceled.
Right, but it's in terms of it just being the last episode, I think it ends so true to what the show is that it does a good enough job of it. And I think like a terrible finale, I've talked about this before, is Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad basically portrays everything that's gone on before that episode happens. Mm-hmm. It like mm-hmm. flips everything around in this really unsatisfying way just to make Walt the hero at the yeah. end. Mm-hmm. And yeah. that's not what a finale should do. A finale needs to tie into the entire previous history of the show, not rock the boat too much like the Seinfeld finale did.
Right.
You need to stay true to what the show is. You need to act in the way that the show is, and you need to leave it open enough where I can sort of... The only shows I think about now are shows that are open-ended. Like, I think about... I never think about the Breaking Bad ending, where these people are now. I think about what happened to Tony Soprano, and I think about what happened to Swearengen in Deadwood and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If I'm shut off, it makes me stop thinking about the series from it mm-hmm. too much. All Good Things, I think, is remarkable because of... I wrote down here that it... What they did is they took all the positives and all the negatives of TNG and put them in an episode. And the positives are there in a good way, and the negatives are there, and they're kind of poking fun at them, but not in a way that ruins the story.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing would be like Geordi's introduction is like, we got a problem in the warp core or some other damn bullshit. Like it's
self-aware. Yeah. Self-aware. I like that part of it. Yeah.
That's basically what I think it does really, really well. It brings back ER, it brings back O'Brien. It does all that stuff. It hits.
Maybe that's why it's my favorite episode. just based on ER and O'Brien's screen time.
O'Brien gets a lot of screen time.
He does.
But I think that it has like a central techno babble solution that's not really important, but it doesn't stand in the way because the episode's good enough to get out of the way.
I would like to point out that though they poke fun at it, that kind of stuff when Geordi shows up, the anti-time thing is like the pinnacle of Star Trek bullshit science.
Yes.
It's like you cannot get more ridiculous than anti-time and the way they try to explain that garbage. It's awesome. Yep. It's great.
Which is
it just owns it too. It has no apologies for it. It totally believes its own bullshit there. Yeah.
Yep.
As long as they, you know, as long as the show buys into it and has us going through that kind of thing, it works. Like I wrote down the negative is the techno babble and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's good here, but the show, it does have a problem with techno babble type solutions to things. I think honestly, the positive here is, the story and the character work. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned how it sort of everything good that I like about TNG, Spiner's performances here are like such an encapsulation of why the Data performance is so good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I mean, you could technically say that the Data that you see in the future is actually the second Data that you see at the end of Nemesis, if you really wanted to go that far with
it. You could. I don't think anyone would be happy seeing B4 show up again.
Yeah.
I think it's just so... His performance is just so good across all of the things, even just old Data, like original Data,
mm-hmm.
Into sort of modern Data, and then the future Data, who's kind of an asshole. He crosses that line into the descent type thing where he starts just at more advanced Data is basically an asshole. what did you any thoughts about the actress here? Everyone got a chance to shine. Anyone you thought that didn't really work out or anything went wrong with it or anything like that?
I thought it was weird they just kind of removed Troy from the future.
I didn't think
she could act good enough to get her put in the future again. But
she's dead.
Everyone else got to literally stretch their legs and act in a variety of different ways in this episode. It's pretty remarkable, the chops on display between all the characters.
Yeah, but, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well,
That's good.
I was just going to say, yeah, I was kind of – I found the Troy thing interesting too because I loved what they did with that storyline because it's mm-hmm. not – it's so subtle the way that they weave that.
You're talking about the Worf-Riker
Troy. Yeah, the love triangle there. Like the way that they handle that stuff is way more subtle than I would expect from this show.
I think they handle the Crusher Picard relationship in a similar subtle kind of. Literally kiss, but it's like it's not heavy handed. The time travel stuff really sneaks in nicely. I didn't mean to interrupt, but go ahead about Riker, Troy, and Worf.
The subtlety that they weave it in allows the actors actually to act with the material. Mm. Like when Riker asks Troy if she wants to get dinner, and then she's like, oh, we have plans. That next scene when Riker just kind of like is out of it, sitting there, kind of zoned out, that's like the best acting he's ever done.
Yeah.
and
the most
like
subtlest
the way,
this show has ever been too, right, yeah.
Yeah, and when they get to the future stuff, like the relationship that you see with Worf and Riker, even before they spell it out,
yes,
there's clearly something going on there that you can kind of piece together has something to do with Troy, especially because you haven't seen her yet.
Worf is upset with Riker because he seems more upset than he should be that Riker didn't give a ship to Picard.
Yeah.
Is like the first hint at it. Yeah,
yeah, and it's just really well done. And you know, the way Riker in the future is Orson Welles basically, and he's a lot more stern. But he's even more stern with Worf, and they like. But the scene where they're sitting around and he's talking about Deanna's death, he still kind of breaks down a little bit. But
yeah.
it's just really, really well done.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think it's remarkable how.
Although I will say, sorry, my favorite piece of acting in the episode is when Picard argues with the waitress about the kind of tea he's drinking.
It's strong writing. It goes the distance.
That went both ways. She's like, of course it's hot. That was good.
Could have sworn this was Darjeeling.
How many cats does Data need to own, I guess, would be the question about that. Mm. Did you guys have a favorite timeline?
I really liked old Picard, I think.
I think
he was he acted it so well of just kind of an old man. You don't know if he's still all there kind of thing, but he wants to be. And he's frustrated with his own body kind of thing, mm-hmm. and his own limitations. And I thought that was just so well acted.
I think I'm going to know why – you just reminded me why I'm going to fail talking about this episode, because I think it's remarkably well written, where the Picard – when Picard shifts into the past or the future tense of him – it's a little bit more obvious because he has this disease that's apparently like space Alzheimer's, and that's affecting him. So you don't really know what's going to do. But it also, when he goes back into the past, he is forced to become more like old Picard because he can't explain to the crew what's going on. So he has to be very terse with them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really clever how they manage to make his character actually make sense when he goes back into the original Picard, who was much more of a terse, grumpy kind of captain in the first season. It's remarkable, really.
Yeah. It's tough for me to pick one that I like the most, because I think that they're one of the real strengths of the show, of this episode, is how they each timeline treats what's happening differently, at least to begin with. And so in the past, he doesn't want to tell anybody anything because he doesn't want to upset the timeline, even though they established that doesn't really matter.
Right.
The present timeline, you're right in the pocket of everybody working together. So he just comes right out. He's like, yeah, I've been going to the past and telling people shit.
Right.
And I'm also going to the future and nobody believes me.
Right.
And then the future stuff is they have a really great reaction to it where, yeah, he's got this neurological disease. So there is a chance that he could be crazy, but they also want to humor him because he's Picard. Like, it's mm-hmm. played really well. And I think I would probably go as much as I love Tasha Yar, I think I would say the future one is probably my favorite timeline.
That's interesting. That was most of the criticism I read about it said the future was the most interesting. I really enjoyed the past for some reason. Mm-hmm. Even though they were hamstrung and they couldn't have all the characters on it, they had a nice Riker cameo where they just dubbed in some old footage.
Yeah,
yeah, that was great.
That was a good idea.
Yeah, they because it's obviously before they get to Farpoint where they pick up half the cast, so that's mm-hmm. why Geordi and people weren't there, and Crusher and Riker weren't there,
which I think is good. I think it's a good change because I think the problem that you get into with stuff like this is any time that you want to do this, you always want to establish what everybody's doing, and you can get really you can stretch really far to work in characters. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the way that they worked everybody into it in the future was pretty elegant. But if they had gone into the past and were like, all right, we're going to work everybody who's ever been on the show into this, it would have been felt really cheesy.
Yeah.
So the fact that they didn't even have four of the main characters on the ship at the time, which allowed you to do more with Yar and O'Brien because they don't exist anywhere else in the timeline. Like, I thought that stuff was really good.
I also thought that because in the past, I was almost a little bit concerned that the crew might mutiny at any moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that the highest rank they had was, I guess Data was there, but Yar seemed to be the one who was ordering people around. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was kind of clever to get rid of Riker because Riker would have been the one to have to stand up and be like, no, we're not driving the ship into the black hole of death or whatever.
Yeah, he just came off of a big mutiny, so he's got a taste for it at this point.
Yes, it's like blood in the water. He's a shark just swimming around for it. Modi, would you so you enjoyed the future thing. Did you like the past, or did you think anything was a weak link?
I loved the past, too. I loved that there is that suspicion of, like, is this guy – we've just met this guy. Like,
right.
I kept thinking of that. Like, this is their only experience with him. But then he gives that great speech of how he knows that he knows what they're capable of. He knows that they're the best crew out there and that kind of thing. It's mm-hmm. a really good speech to give to that character at that time. And it, I guess it makes it believable that they went along with him at that point maybe.
Yeah.
They just wanted his approval because they wanted approval of this new captain.
He had a lot of leeway in the past. I will say that as something that goes on.
The past is missing a scene where everybody's hanging out in 10 forward and they're like, who is this crazy, insane person that they gave our ship to?
Yep. This guy gets the flagship of the Federation. He steps off the thing and orders red alert right away.
What would you have done if the past sequence was when they approach the Enterprise? It's just like a 40-minute version of them seeing the Enterprise first movie. So every time they cut back to the past, they're still circling around the Enterprise.
You know what actually kind of makes me a little bit sad? I realize that the Next Generation theme is just a redone version of the motion pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that really upsets me on some level. I don't know what it is, but it's I also thought of the we should have had 40 minutes of the motion picture just flying around the Enterprise a million times for no particular reason.
Also, if you've listened to the show, you know one of the things that annoys me is, but I understand why they do it, is the closeness of things, these gigantic ships fighting with each other a mile away from each other, which doesn't make any sense. This is a really good example of something like that, where you've got Yar and Picard flying in the shuttlecraft towards the ship for a good while, and only when they're about maybe 100 miles away is she like, oh, there it is. Like, he hasn't been able to see it for the past 20 minutes. They've been approaching this gigantic galaxy-class starship.
Scales a little bit off in the Star Trek The Next Generation, I guess.
And that comes into play a little bit later, too, when they end up fighting the Klingons. And it's close-quarter ship combat.
Yeah,
it really is. Right there. With a super gun on the Enterprise. I don't want to get to that yet. Let's get to... This is ostensibly a Q episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good Q or bad Q?
I think it's great.
This Q is awesome.
Yeah. The balls on this episode to not introduce the villain until the last 5 minutes of the first half is awesome.
Yes.
Love it.
It takes about an hour before you realize the Q is involved. Although, what I thought was clever was in the past, Picard sets out to find Q.
Yeah.
And he's not there, which is really incredible, right? Like, I wouldn't have thought to do that. It kind of caught me off guard just because of it was clever and that it shows that things have changed and that Q is somehow involved. It kind of hints at that a little bit just because things aren't perfectly working out the way that they should. I think go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to say it is kind of an odd choice to do that because it's not a natural decision for him to make at that point.
Right.
Like, why not just go along with the usual way things are going?
It's outside of the story that's currently being told. He's remembering a past difference
Right.
That didn't happen. Yeah.
Or why even go there? Why not? Because he goes there and Q isn't there, and he just starts yelling for Q.
Right.
Couldn't he just do that? Don't these episodes usually just begin with something weird happening and someone goes, Q?
Yeah.
And then Q shows up?
He could do that in every episode. This is the kind of card you get to play once on the series, and they saved it for this episode. Because there is enough weird stuff going on all the time. He's like, I guess it's Q again. And they go to Farpoint to get look for him.
can't quite wrap him up.
No, I can't find him again. What's going on here? Q?
I love this Q. This is, like I said before, this is all the good stuff of Trek. This is the best use of Q. As I've said previously, the best use of Q is him versus Picard, and mm-hmm. Q is a moral barometer of some kind.
Yeah.
He is giving them the ability to see something within themselves or to see how a change is being made and things like that. And I thought the final scene with Q, where they both kind of mutually, so they don't smirk, but they subtly like smile at each other,
mm-hmm.
is amazing. Like I'm very happy about this episode, because season 7 was such a letdown that this episode just really sort of sealed something for me. It's a good final impression that you want.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that the last scene with Q and Picard is so pleasant and, like, nice. And I love the speech that Q makes about, this is about something bigger than stars and nebula. This is about, existence, understanding existence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a nice, it was kind of a nice takeaway from like when we're recording this now in 2016, and I'm on Twitter every day, and I feel like the opposite kind of happens, and it makes me feel weird because I don't really like the Roddenberry ethos, which I want to talk about, but this episode makes it work and makes it seem appropriate in a weird way, if that makes sense. It makes it feel possible and good, I guess, which is kind of a weird thing to say about it.
Well, just to touch on the actual what happens in that scene. I love that little bit where Q leans in to whisper something in Picard's ear, and he just like totally fakes him out.
Right, he's about to tell him what it's all about. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. I think that's the perfect ending for him to just dangle a carrot in front of him just enough to make him jump at it, and then
right.
pulls it away.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah. Modi, would you?
This episode is all just leaves a good taste in your mouth afterwards. Like the way the Q is handled here is the best we've seen it, and you actually like the character of Q, where I wouldn't have thought that before. You know, like you appreciate the character for what it is now
right.
after this episode, but you know prior to this, it was just kind of this goofball shenanigans guy that shows up to ruin their day kind of thing. But now it's like. They do it so well here, and then throughout the show, every single time we see the wrap up with the character or something like that, when we're saying goodbye to everybody, it leaves you in a good feeling across the board here.
Yeah, yeah,
the family should.
I've always liked the idea of Q as he exists in this episode, where he's basically kind of like he's basically God.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. he's God who is he's non-interventionist, but he doesn't mind putting problems in front of you just to see if you can solve them.
Right.
Like he's going to set the situation up and kind of give you he's going to put the problem in front of you, but he's not going to help you solve it. And I always liked that version of him where he's more just kind of fascinated by how humans will handle this problem more than anything else.
It's just so much of a better evolution off of what Trek is, you know, a negative of Trek is that they love the trickster God. And that's basically what Q was at first.
Right.
And there's nothing more annoying than the trickster god character. You need bigger stakes to that kind of narrative power. Like, there's no reason for someone who can basically destroy the universe to just be turning people into, like, pigs and stuff like that. It's like, it seems bizarre that this was happening. And they get around it really just pretty sweetly here. This is, I will say that maybe it doesn't even matter, but I do feel like the central problem in this episode is not that interesting. But I want to stress that I don't really think it matters. You know, the stakes are to save humanity, but the time anomaly is not particularly interesting to
me. And it also, it doesn't even really make as much sense as it. Well, I mean, it's tighter than a lot of these things are. But even when they break it down and Data is they show that thing of, it looks like there's three tachyon pulses all coming from the Enterprise.
Right.
But the third one didn't come from the Enterprise. It came from
the Pasteur.
The Pasteur. And, they don't even – it's not like they that's a goof that they gloss over. They even mention that in the next scene is that it came from the – like, it's a weird
– Yeah.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't even really entirely hold together.
It doesn't even matter.
It does not. It doesn't matter at all. It holds together probably better than a lot of this stuff usually does. But yeah, there's a little jankiness.
Well, it's like we've talked before. If the episode's good, you can overlook the stupid shit like that. When the episodes are bad, you're like, I saw the stupid shit endlessly, and it distracted me, and I couldn't pay attention. Mm-hmm. It's that kind of a thing.
Well, the anti-time thing is just I was trying to listen to really unpack what the hell they were talking about, and I was just like, this is grade A level bullshit that they're slinging. Like it has the same relation with time as antimatter does with matter. It's like, okay, great.
Okay.
What does that mean?
It basically just commits abortions on people is what anti-time does, right? That's the
they go out of their way to point out that the changes that are happening in each timeline doesn't affect any of the other timelines because like the stuff that happens in the past doesn't change the present.
Was that part of Q though? Was that a Q thing? Or does it matter?
Well, they don't explain it, but they bring up the fact that it doesn't change
anything. That it doesn't change anything, right.
So going back to the beginning of time and watching life fail to form, does that then, if you really want to break it down, will that affect everything or will it not affect anything? But it doesn't matter because it's just technobabble that is just getting you through the larger theme that they're trying to lay out.
Right, know? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the primordial scene was actually the worst because there's no good way to show that amino acids aren't combining into a protein.
That's my favorite bit because as he's explaining it, Picard is there like really intensely. He's doing his miming prop work where he's really looking at that puddle of slime as though he's watching those microscopic bits fail to meld.
Well, the director told them they were going to put some CGI together, right? He's looking at it
That's exactly what I was thinking. He's like, oh, they ran out of budget on this part. Okay, good.
And they just didn't do it. And it's very low stakes when Q's just like, it didn't happen. You'll have to take my word on it, but it just did not happen.
I always thought of that scene more of like a, I don't know. I always take it a little bit less literally than they're showing it to you. Like it's more about what he's saying than actually what he's seeing. You know what I mean?
It's the ultimate point of this. Yeah, exactly. It's going to cause humanity to not appear. Gives me like a Prometheus vibe or something. It's like an anti-Prometheus vibe or something like that.
Right, right.
But I did think it's clever that the anomaly moves backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's bigger in the past and it's not present in the future, which I think is kind of a neat twist on the idea of like this is how ANSI time works. It also goes backwards and the problem gets worse in the past.
Yeah, and I found it really interesting because it's one of those things where if Picard chooses not to go after it in the future, does that then mean that nothing happens? I guess it does.
I guess that's true, right?
Yeah.
Or does it just become small? I don't know.
The longer you don't do something, the better it gets.
Yeah.
So that's the moral of the story.
But, you know, like it's
procrastination in the episode.
There's that little bit of alternate possibility behind it, but the thing that makes it so good is that by nature Picard and the human race, the point that they're trying to make is going to explore that stuff. So I like it when Q does that kind of thing where he tricks you into being the problem and then you have to solve it for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that stuff is great.
Modi, do you think a feature length was appropriate here? This is an hour and a half. Worked.
Yeah, this would be a good film if they wanted to make it as like just the final episode being just, and that's how you kind of watch it on Amazon, I suppose, is all the way through. They don't do the credits. I think they do the intro again though.
Yeah.
But, that's kind of how I watched it anyways. This was one long thing. I think it worked. I think they didn't. There was so much they had to get to, and there's so many elements to this that they didn't do the normal Star Trek thing of tightly trying to wrap up part one as its own thing,
right?
And then having a part two that continues the problem somewhat, but some of the problems are still like solved already. Kind of like
half the problem is gone.
Here. Yeah, and so like this one kept the A plots, kept the B plots, kept everything from some scene to scene, and didn't really give you a lot of answers at the end of part one, so that it still worked as a full thing.
I think. Do you a quick poll? Would this have been the best Star Trek movie? Next Generation movie.
Yes.
This is the best movie. I don't know.
You'd have First Contact over it.
Well, it's tough because I think when you move into movies, you're dealing with a whole different set of things. Like, I recently went back and I watched, well, recently, a couple years ago now, watched my way through the X-Files. And there's a certain point where I think around season 5, the bridge between seasons 5 and 6, or possibly seasons 4 and 5, is the first X-Files movie. And I don't know. Like, watching that movie independent of the show would make no sense whatsoever.
Sure.
But, well, I guess it makes sense. But I guess the problem it has is when you watch the movie in the context of watching the show, the movie they make has to be for the people who have never seen the X-Files as much
That's
as
true.
It has to be for the people who watch the show.
Yep.
So if you watch the X-Files movie after watching 4 seasons of, like, great X-Files – or, well, you know, like 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
You get to the movie, and the movie just feels like a big-budget, kind of okay episode of the show.
Sure.
Because they're covering a lot of really basic stuff, and there's characters that you've seen 100 times before on the show in just a more expensive way in the movie. So it is a little bit hampered that way. So I think if they were to do this as a movie, you wouldn't have as much. What am I trying to say? The character stuff that you get from the show, I think, would not be there. I think they would probably trim a lot of that stuff out.
Okay, I understand what you mean.
I'm trying to dial it in, but I don't know if I'm really getting there.
No,
but
I think I understand. Yeah. You think that this finale is too much for the fans of the series, to a point where you need to be familiar with the show to enjoy it?
Yeah.
Where the movies would just kind of get rid of that. I mean, I think this would be, speaking as a fan, I think this would be the best movie if they kind of updated it, made it cinematic and everything. Although I do say that the direction here is really strong for the episode. There's a lot of close-ups, a lot of good camera work and stuff like that. I think that the last two scenes of this movie hit me harder than any scene from any of the movies.
Yeah. If this had been the movie that if they did this instead of Nemesis, I would think it would be great.
Right.
Like if this was the final word on TNG
and
this was just the movie that they were going to do, I think it would have been a great movie.
I think I'd agree with that. I mean, it feels more like they really nailed the tone of the series here. It's like endlessly optimistic, very positive towards humanity, everything like that. One of the we're kind of spoiling a thing, but one of the questions here, which I got for the next podcast we'll be doing, do you think Gene Roddenberry would have been happy with how this finale came out?
That's tough, because I was thinking about that, and the cynic in me wants to say no because it has characters in it.
There was emotionality going on. You wouldn't be afraid for that.
There was some conflict on page 17. I wasn't too pleased.
Oh, yeah, Worf and Riker having a disagreement would not have happened.
That's true. Yeah. Do you think he would have liked it? Or
I think he probably would have.
I kind of agree. I think the writers did a really excellent job of homage to him, while also making a good episode out of it.
Yeah.
Those are mutually exclusive, normally.
They kind of are.
Here it works.
In this sad way. Just because his ethos is not conducive to storytelling.
Which is ironic, but
he created 762 episodes of something, but he's not particularly good at it. It's kind of like this podcast. I think he would have been very happy with this, how this one turned out. I think it represents everything that he would want out of it. And I'd have to imagine that he would have liked it. Is there any reason he wouldn't have liked it? Do you think anything flies in the face of Star Trek orthodoxy in this one? I don't think it does, which I think is really. Why it's really interesting. No. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's pretty, you know, rides the line pretty well.
What movie would he have disliked the most?
Probably First Contact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Which is also ironic because it's the best one. Oh, speaking of the movie, the last thing I want to say, one of the reasons I don't think this would work well as a movie, as if like an independent movie, is because even though in this episode, the stakes are all of humanity, it's actually a pretty small story.
Yeah.
And I don't. Mm-hmm. I think if you moved it to a feature film, they would have to jack the story way up. Well, I don't think it would land as well.
We would have seen the 30 warbirds on the neutral zone, right?
Yeah.
There would have been many scenes of those ships like lining up and staring at each other.
Yeah, and the Pasteur wouldn't get 6 hours sitting in empty space to tachyon pulse empty dead air.
Yeah.
And then when the Klingons showed up, it would be like 14 of them.
Right.
You know, so it would like I think that stuff would get lost. I think you wouldn't. It's a small story, and I think that the smallness of it would get lost because they would have to jack it way up as they usually do. Q would be like a giant Galactus shaped cloud,
right? Yeah, he would. That would have been like the Green Lantern cloud. You guys tell me what you want to talk about here. Don't let me control this. Is there anything that we're missing? What'd you think of the Picard Crusher marriage and then divorce?
Well, I was going to ask you guys.
Do you like that?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No.
Yeah.
You go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I was going to ask you guys, do you think that moved too fast given for the rest, the way they handled that relationship for the rest of the show? Because I feel like that was when I went back and I started watching this again after this being kind of the only episode that I would watch repeatedly over and over. I was surprised to find that the Crusher Picard thing wasn't really that overt for basically all of the show.
Oh, okay. You mean over the course of the series? Yeah.
Yeah. And then when they get to this one, it's just like, you know, well, we have to make this plot line in the future work, so we'll have them kiss.
Right.
Even like it, like I don't know. Do you guys, having watched pretty much the whole series, do you feel that was earned, or do you think that was just like a plot device to move it forward?
Modi, you go first.
I think it was well handled here.
Yeah.
I think it was subtle. They didn't get into it too much. They let you kind of fill your own gaps in it. Throughout the series, they did had this. It was occasional, but it was this interesting unrequited kind of love kind of thing going on that they always had, and. I imagine that they would have got together much later after he'd retired as a captain and become a bastard. That's probably when they would have gotten married, where he isn't married to the job anymore kind of thing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They give you enough to kind of fill in your own gaps with it, I think, which I like. And they don't really push it too much, and they don't really need to explain it too much.
I think it runs into a problem because I don't have enough information to understand why they got divorced in a weird way. That's my question that I come out of it.
Yeah. What would happen there?
Like, and if anything, this episode makes the ending to Attached insulting at this point. Attached was the episode where Crusher and Picard get kidnapped and they get implanted with these things where they can read each other's minds. Mm-hmm. And they sort of reveal that they're in love with each other. And the end of that episode, Picard basically says, so now, Beverly, maybe we should try to move this relationship forward. And she says, maybe we shouldn't. And then the credits roll. And it's so it's so insulting and so stupid that that's all I could think about from this episode was how bad that ending of that episode was. I think it's just
ending, though.
I don't really understand why they would get divorced. I also don't understand why Picard would cryptically say that he knows the captain of a medical ship when they clearly went to the wedding that these two would have.
Yeah.
There's no
knowing look from Data or Geordi. It's just like, okay, who could he possibly be talking about?
Right. Yeah. Data with all his
or
knowledge.
Or it was an inside joke. Like, I know a captain I could talk to. Like, it was an inside joke kind of thing. Like, they're all in on it. They're just trying to be coy.
he's like, oh, you know, Jean-Luc, did you ask her that while you were sleeping on the couch last night or something? But it's like...
Then they cut to the tea lady, and she's like, who could they possibly be talking about?
Do you think that it was fair of Data to push his course load onto that other professor?
he says, ask him if he minds taking my classes, actually, for the rest of the week.
This is, has to be also something that's never happened before, given how who Data is and what Data's capable of. This is the first time that he's ever asked him of anything, probably.
He's never taken a sick day. Maybe he was due for one, I guess, at this point. Yeah.
He has a lot of... I mean, it depends. I don't know how Starfleet or, I guess, Cambridge works. Do your sick days roll over so you can take, like, vacation plus sick days? if you've been there for, like, 25 tenured. Years? Yeah.
They're on the NHS or something. Was he at Cambridge? Is that what they said?
Yeah.
Okay, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a very Star Trek-y, Star Wars-y, the speeder. The little speeder that goes by when they show the exterior shot of Cambridge.
Yeah.
Do you think any characters here got short shrift? Anyone who you think walked away from this going, I should have had a couple more lines out of this thing?
Well, I was going to ask you guys, do you feel like Guinan is missing from this episode?
She's 100% missing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously she's not there, but do you feel like she should be?
Yes.
I think she would have too much idea of what's going on, though. That she might be problematic plot-wise of like, why doesn't she understand what's going on here? Because she's kind of this extra-dimensional kind of person to start with.
I think that you get around it just by not having her be the story, but like Picard in the past walks past her and she looks at him funny or something like that. Like you just kind of get around it. I mean, I miss her because I've missed her the entire seventh season. Yeah. She comes back in Generations, but... Like, O'Brien gets a surprising amount of screen time. I mean, he's a star of DS9 at this point, so that makes sense. But I thought she was missing. Outside of that, I would have thought that Troy gets the, as you mentioned, she gets short shrifted, I think.
Yeah, well, I think they kind of go, as we've talked about in the past, I think they kind of go hand in hand here, because because Guinan is a better version of Troy.
Right.
And so if you have Guinan, you've got... a character that's too powerful given what's going on. Like in yesterday's Enterprise, Guinan knows that something's up.
Right.
And she's basically the Picard character as Picard is in this, Guinan is in yesterday's Enterprise, basically.
Yeah.
And so I think having her there would solve the problem too easily or something. And I think because if Guinan's there in any capacity, she can confirm or deny that he's not just going crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think Troy has the same function, which might be why that they killed her. Well, aside from
that's
the character stuff,
yeah,
the fact that they killed her off in the future, she's not there to be like, I'm reading his thoughts peripherally because I can't really do much. He seems like he's telling the truth, but he's also reticent.
That's true.
But given that because Troy's missing, we get the great Worf and Riker stuff, I feel like it's a fair trade.
Oh, absolutely. I think plot-wise,
that's a good decision to make.
I'm really only thinking this because she comes in late to the poker table room scene for some reason. I don't really understand why that happens, why she's not there from the start. Because Picard walks in literally 5 seconds after she does. That was the only thing. She has the opening scene, too, with Worf, I guess.
Well, you got to have that full body shot of her in the purple thing.
Right.
For all the fans.
For all the fans have been here for 7 years and stuff. Let's talk about the poker scene, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The poker table, a very important part, an important part, or a not important part of the series, the poker table itself.
Itself among the show itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's fairly important because, I mean, you know, I think Gene Roddenberry probably would have hated the poker table.
Yes, yeah.
Because it's the only time that you get to see more than two or three characters at a time talking about stuff that isn't ship-related.
Right.
You know, it's usually...
It's not a conference room scene.
Yeah, you usually see them in the conference room or on the bridge, and it's, you know, you don't really get to see any... Or I guess 10 Forward serves that purpose as well. But even there, it's like you're among everybody else.
The poker table is more private.
Yeah.
Yes, it doesn't. It never feels story related. It is, but it's not directly them talking about the story a lot of the time. It's them,
unless the ship keeps exploding,
right? And then they do all threes and everything. But it always feels it's the only time the show feels like it lets down its hair a little bit. Mm-hmm. And who is it? Devin Farashi? Is that that guy's name, Clay?
Yes.
The guy who just basically says TNG is like just a bureaucrat's dream. Like they probably just fill out personnel reports in their spare time.
Yeah,
it does feel like that a lot of the time. And the poker table kind of gets rid of that. It allows for a lot of really good humor too, mm-hmm. for some reason. And I think the ending scene of this episode is wonderful. Is there anybody going to challenge me on that, or is there any kind of criticism of it?
No, it's a fantastic scene. My wife, I watched the first half of this on my own, and then I turned on the second half of it this morning to finish it out, and then my wife walked in at like the last like 10 minutes of it, and she was like, she watched the poker scene, she's like, I'm tearing up watching just this scene.
I teared up.
I know like, the weight of it.
Yeah. it's the past 2 years in a nutshell, but it's really great. It's almost a shame you don't have more moments like that with this crew in the past of all these kind of episodes. It's fitting because Picard says he should have done this a long time ago and everything mm-hmm. like that. I like the fact that he warned them about how they're not going to be friends in the future.
I love that. Yeah. That he was like, they lay it out at the beginning where he's like, well, I'm in the past. I probably shouldn't tell anybody anything about the future. But after he sees how shitty the future is, and that it's probably not going to play that way out anyway, he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to tell everybody everything and make sure that these people are not assholes to each other.
Consequences be damned. Yeah, I like it.
I think it's excellent.
It's like Doc Brown wearing the bulletproof vest at the end of that.
Yep, exactly.
I just think it's a wonderful coda. I think the shot of the Enterprise is excellent. The music swell is really great there. Picard's Sky's the Limit. Apparently the writers couldn't figure out what poker term to use. They settled on Sky's the Limit. I think it works. I think it
works nicely. Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good one. And it's really nice. Go ahead.
Do you feel do you like that better than if they had done a bridge shot to end it?
Ooh.
Because I feel like the bridge shot is the
more iconic.
More iconic and probably the more expected way to end it. Like I appreciate that they ended it in a more intimate way, but I feel like, you know, the bridge shot after the close up of him saying engage or something is what you would expect them to end on.
I actually thought that if I was going to end it, I would have gone back to the callback at Farpoint. Picard ends it by just saying, "Let's see what's out there."
Mm-hmm.
I could have seen mm-hmm. him just repeating that again.
What if how would you have felt if they switched it up so you get the last scene with the crew, but then the final scene is the scene with Q?
No, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah,
I would. Yeah, I think you just have to end with the senior staff, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm a little bit. Maybe it's the modern.
I wish during that poker scene, someone had brought the little Tasha Yar hologram that they could have played.
the memorial hologram.
So she could stand there awkwardly while they play poker.
And Data whispers to Worf, he's like, "I hit that," and then cut to black. I'm a little. You know what I would have liked as a fan of the series? I would have liked a season 5 Wire finale, a montage of just the ship going about its day.
Oh yeah.
That would have been pretty nice.
That would have been good, too.
That would have been.
Because, show the bridge with no one there because everyone's down playing poker.
Right.
What's going on there? Yeah.
Show 10 forward. We had lower decks, so we could obviously bring back those characters and show them in different places.
Well, if they had just kept up what they started with Emergence, the ship could be sentient, wouldn't need anybody to fly it anyway.
Right. Yeah, the ship is just jumping. that would have been a nice callback to Emergence if when they say, like, you know, they're at the climax of the story, and he's like, "Sail us into the middle of the anomaly," and the ship just goes, "I'd rather not," and just turns around and leaves and goes on its way. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about this one? I love this episode. I think it makes me feel good. I'm sort of tainted because now the series is over, and as I mentioned to Sean and Tana, I think my biggest sort of the thing that's been most eye-opening to me is that I used to have a big binder of these DVDs, like one of those black flip binders things where when mm-hmm. I burned all the DVDs, I'd flip through them and I'd try to pick out an episode. And when they moved to Netflix, I would randomly scroll through. I always, before this podcast, used to think that there's a chance there's an episode I've never seen of Star Trek The Next Generation. I know now that that was not true at that time, and it's definitely not true now. And that's kind of bittersweet.
Yeah, I remember there – I can't remember exactly what show it was, but there was a couple shows that I remember that I used to watch where I would only see it in reruns, so I was always thinking that there was some episodes that I'd missed. And I guess that's kind of the – that's one of the joys of episodic TV versus serialized TV, I guess. Because serialized, you kind of know if you've missed something.
Right.
But if you're going I think it was Highlander, actually, because I watched – I used to watch Highlander all the time, but I knew that there was probably at least an entire season that I'd never seen, just because I didn't know where things landed or, you know, based on when they were replaying what episode. So I figured there's a good chunk of them that I had never seen. And when I did the rewatch, I realized, there was at least a season a season combined number of episodes that I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
So that's always fun.
It is. It's very, 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 very bittersweet.
I would like to talk about the way that they cut back and forth through the time periods.
Sure.
Because I think it's great. I think it was Bloodlines that I was doing, where we talked about how it's just stagnant and there's no urgency to anything.
Right.
And it's just like a blocking exercise. Mm. The way that they handle the time jumping in this is so absolutely the opposite of that.
Yes.
Because as it goes on, the jumping gets more abrupt. Like, first of all, I love that the points where they decide to jump are completely jarring almost every time. And as it goes on, the jumping starts happening faster and faster, which then is picking up the pace for the episode and raising the what's the word I'm looking for?
The stakes of what's I mean?
Raising the tension of the episode.
Yeah.
And just when they get to the point where they're cutting mid sentence, and Picard is totally on top of it, and he just is, he's like, "Oh, okay, so I see what you're telling me is what's that, sir? We have to do attack it." Like he's totally just rolling with the chain. When they get to that point, it's like this is great because they're just pushing everything forward. You know, the train's rolling, and it's just all driving towards the end. It's really, really greatly paced.
I like the one where Picard jumps back and he's like, "All right, I shut down the beams in the two other timelines."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before that, but when he's in the future, he's like, "Okay, when I'm there, I'll tell them to shut it off next time." And then they go doo doo doo, and he comes back. All right, I've shut it off at both of the other timelines.
I just wondered just now if time is passing while he's like, is he picking up right where he left off when he jumps between timelines, or is there time passing where he's just like going like limp, or is he like going about his business like normal?
Right,
some timelines here.
It's a Weekend at Bernie's when he's not inhabiting that.
I don't understand.
It's funny you bring that up because I was thinking, I'm so glad that you don't know what happens. So I'm glad that there's not like a shot of him where he just like passes out or some shit like that. Yeah. Like it's totally fluid. There's no – it's not like every time they cut back, they're dealing with like him waking up in sick bay because he just whacked his head on something.
I didn't even realize that until you just said it, that I don't know what he was doing in the time.
It doesn't bother you at the time until you start really thinking about it.
Huh. Well, it's the kind of thing – oh, I was just going to say it's
– this guy.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go, buddy. Yeah, he's always like a half a second behind on here. So I was going to say that this does what a lot of the episodes are missing, and it does it almost every single cut here, in that it starts in the middle of the scene always. It starts with the action. It starts with the meat of it always, which is something the show could use throughout the series everywhere else, basically.
Yeah.
Even the very first opening with Worf and Deanna, it starts mid conversation almost.
Yeah,
and it's not like it doesn't start. Nothing here ever starts at the beginning of the scene, which I love.
That's true
throughout the series here.
I think that this episode, jumping off of that point, Modi, is I could show this episode to someone who had never seen the show before, and I don't think that they would be really lost. Because they do a really good job of creating the world by dropping you into the middle of it. Like they don't, even though you might not know what's going on, you kind of pick it up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And the relationships between the characters are well defined at this point. And even if you've never seen the show before, okay, clearly Troy and Worf have a thing going on, but Riker clearly used to go out with Troy,
right?
And like that stuff is really clear. And they don't explicitly mention that Tasha died, but you can kind of pick that up.
Yep.
Yep.
You know, it's really well done.
Just the subtlety. Yeah, it's like even if you don't realize she's not in the present and she's not in the future. You know what I mean? Like something happened here.
And also the fact that when he's in the past, Picard gives an order to Worf that he forgets that Tasha's still there.
I love that beat. I think that's really clever.
It's like they're finally ready to appreciate that their audience is smart enough to understand what's going on.
Yes.
Like they don't need to explain anything here. Whereas in the past episodes, they would have not given the audience enough credit, I feel like. Here they just, all bets are off. Like, if you don't get it, you don't get it. But everyone's going to get it. It's because it's well written. So
that's true. It's a very adult script and a very... I think it's just because they ultimately realize that this is kind of a Valentine to fans in a good way. It's like 60% that.
The Valentine to me is when the Pastor is about to explode and then fucking Admiral Riker comes in shredding with like Metallica playing behind him as he just blows up a bunch of Klingon ships. I talked about this when we did yesterday's Enterprise, but my favorite thing in Star Trek is when they do... Or in a lot of things, is when they do, like, alternate future, specifically because I want to see how the costumes change.
Yeah.
And so when the Enterprise shows up and it's got, like, that giant dildo extra, you know,
cannon.
Big dick hypercell on top of the back, and he's just, like, icing these shit. He's just using his regular laser and just blowing the shit out of everybody. I was like... Yeah, he's got that the new symbol on his chain. Oh man, amazing!
I think what is he? Does he say in the episode he like pulled it out of retirement or something?
Yeah, because so that's another thing that I think was really well done that they don't bring a lot of attention to, because I was watching it this time and I was thinking, man. So the fact that on one hand you could look at the fact that the future version of the Enterprise is just the regular Enterprise with another, you know...
nacelle.
Nacelle on the back of it. You could chalk that up to, well, we didn't have a lot of money to do this. But you could also chalk it up to, and the way I was thinking about it this time, is Riker being kind of nostalgic for that time.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting layer to it to add, because I was thinking about that during the 10 forward scene. I was like, yeah, I feel like at this point this ship would either be retired or they would have... moved on to the E or something.
You're right, yeah.
You know, and it's so the fact that his ship is still the Enterprise, that's basically, it's like the Fenway Park of ships where they just keep adding seats to it.
he got rid of the trough, the urinals, and he put a cannon on the thing.
And there's a whole new set of seats on top of the disc section. Like, it says that he is, as gruff as he is, he has a nostalgia for when he was, you know, first made on the Enterprise, which might just be me reading into their lack of funds too much, but no, I think
they
mentioned
it's
nice.
I think they mentioned that they try to decommission it, like, every 5 years or so, but he stops every time.
Yeah,
he doesn't sign off on that thing.
It's like it's like him looking back at the car he had when he was 16.
Right.
Even though he doesn't run anymore, it's still in his front yard.
Right, because like I remember when I got laid in 10 forward and 8 forward and 9 forward.
It doesn't pass the emissions test anymore, but it looks great.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Also, they totally disregarded the force of nature warp speed limit in this episode. Yeah. They're just going above. They're going to 13 multiple times. That's it. I think we're done talking about this episode. Let's go to our final thoughts of a TNG episode.
No, because if we stop talking about it, then the show is over, Wes.
It's over. It's not really over, which we'll get to shortly. Mm. But
you know what you should do next is, you know, that you should do one of those podcasts. You should do the Star Trek Minute, where every episode you do,
I read
you
about go
minute,
that today,
minute by minute through every episode of TNG. You'll be doing this for the rest of your life. Isn't that great?
Have you listened to a minute by minute podcast?
I haven't. The idea just makes my brain hurt a little bit. I don't know.
How long is each episode?
I think it's full length episode.
It's like 45 minutes?
I feel like, I'm not positive, but I feel like they use that as sort of like a framing device. So it's sort
of whatever.
They just talk about
whatever. Okay.
They talk about that minute of Star Wars or whatever, but then they use that as an excuse to branch off into something, into
episode 45
stuff.
Of Attack of the Clones Star Wars minute is 29 minutes long.
Really? So,
yeah. Okay.
Okay. Interesting. So
it's a long podcast, yeah.
Is it 29 minutes of the host just groaning?
It feels like that would be the time to do it, isn't it? Attack of the Clones season. God bless them.
Or Attack of the Clones, the movie. Just every minute must just feel so goddamn terrible. Anyway, let's go to our final thoughts and ratings for All Good Things right after this.
Take it Anytime, Doctor.
Four hands in a row. How does he do it?
I cheat. I'm kidding.
You know, I was thinking about what the captain told us all about the future. About how we all changed and drifted apart. Why would he want to tell us what's to come?
Sure goes against everything we've always heard about not polluting the timeline, doesn't it?
I believe, however, this situation is unique. Since the anomaly did not occur, there have already been changes in the way this timeline is unfolding. The future we experience will undoubtedly be different from the one the captain encountered.
Maybe that's why he told us. Knowing what happens in that future allows us to change things now. So that some things never happen.
Agreed.
Come in.
Am I too late?
Of course not. Pull up a chair.
What's the game?
Five card draw, deuces wild. Come in. Is there a problem, sir?
No. I just thought that I might join you this evening. If there's room.
Of course. Have a seat.
Would you care to deal, sir? Oh, thank you, Mr. Data. Actually, I used to be quite a card player in my youth, you know. I should have done this a long time ago.
You were always welcome.
So, five-card stud, nothing wild. And the sky's the limit.
Guys, this is it. TNG is over. TNG is over. You're both going to be back for the Q&A sort of wrap up video, so we won't get too deep. I do want to just stick to all good things for this episode.
Okay.
Modi, how about you go first? On a scale five. Of 1 to 5, you're giving it a five?
Five, all the fives. You can't. Yeah, there's no question.
Clay?
Absolutely.
Well, because the Enterprise goes to warp 13, I'm going to break the rules. I'm going to give this a 6.
Oh.
It's a hard rule to break. I'm going to give
obviously it's a 5.
I'm going to give this one a 5 as well.
I do have a question for you guys though. Do you I don't think we covered this. I think we were getting in that ballpark, but where would you put this as how would you rank this as a TNG two-parter? Would you say this is the best two-parter?
No.
No?
Well, that's really tough. Because I will get into the minutia where this wasn't written as a two-parter, really. Mm-hmm. Like, they air it as two parts, but it was written as a theatrical length. And it's Best of Both Worlds. It's just the last 10 minutes of Best of Both Worlds aren't very good. Mm-hmm. Part two.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Would you say it is?
Well, you know, I would say generally, yeah, because this is I feel like both halves of it are – I mean – you know, I think that the failings of the two-part is that we've talked about many times is that they feel really disjointed, where it's clear like they wrote the first half and then they went on break for 6 months and they figured out, all right, how do we get out of this?
Right.
Like there's no it's no continuity the way it's written. This one clearly has that. And so both halves of the episode are equally strong.
I would say that this is the best – like if I could change my language, I'd say it's the best hour and a half of Star Trek of a single story. Like, because the two-parter kind of is a little bit of a different implication, but this is the longest amount of time that the show is spent on a single story and done at the best. Mm-hmm. If I could break it down into that minutia, but I'd still have to put, it's really probably only Best of Both Worlds, right? That's ahead of it, I think.
Maybe I think so.
Chain of Command might be the next contender, but that's further down the list. Yeah, Modi, what'd you think? Would you agree, disagree with that?
Yeah, I think now that you tell me that it was written as one thing, it totally makes sense that they wouldn't have the big summation for part one and then start up part two. That's the thing I liked about the most about this is that it feels like one coherent story.
I forget when they break. And a lot of
the two-parters don't do that.
I forget where they break it when they aired it on TV.
Right after the first Q meeting, I think.
Oh, basically. Is it? That makes sense. Yeah. That would be a good place to.
Okay. Yeah, because on Amazon, at least, there's definitely a to be continued dropped in there.
Oh, is right. there?
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. The whole thing plays as one big chunk, but they do have the title cards, the to be continued, and then they do the.
Oh, interesting.
The intro for the next one and the previously on Star Trek thing.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, I totally just watched it as one episode. That's funny. I didn't even realize that. I think that's it. We're all in agreement of five. This is clearly the best episode of season seven. I don't know if this is in my top 10. It's probably not my top five. I don't know if it's in my top five. This is going to be a video about this. Everyone can yell at me about how wrong I am about it. We'll get to that. Guys, one bit of trivia before we wrap up this whole season thing that's taken over 2 years, as I mentioned before. Who are the only two characters to appear in every single episode?
The ship?
That's only post-emergence, I guess.
Well, the ship is really the 12th member of the crew.
It is. It's like really. Seattle's 12th man true. Or something.
Yeah.
We can drink our lattes and cheer.
I'm going to say... Nope. Geordi LaForge.
No.
And no, I don't know.
it's Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes.
Frakes was in every episode?
Yeah, Riker's in every episode, which is shocking.
I was going to say Picard, but I for some reason I felt like that was too easy. I feel like there was one episode where he wasn't there, but I guess not.
The only thing I can notice is that in the credits, those are the only two who are listed as starring as opposed to also starring.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if that's a contractual thing. You know,
I
was a little bit surprised that Riker's in every single episode, but he is.
Well, there's that one episode where Picard transfers his brain into somebody else, so it's like his voice. But no, wait, that's a different show.
That was a prisoner episode.
I'm surprised they didn't do that in the show, to be honest with you.
It looks like they could add an eighth season.
Season eight of TNG, Picard and Riker switch brains.
Just every episode is a variant on whose brain is being switched with somebody else's.
Troy is replaced with a fish tank.
Guys, we're done with TNG. Let's give ourselves a round of applause right there. Guys, thank you very much. You've all been, you two in particular, have been on the most of the episodes, and I appreciate it greatly. I wouldn't have been able to do this. I originally started the show thinking I was going to do all of them by myself, and I was a nut job, I guess, at that point in my life.
Yeah, that would make you go nuts.
But this, it's kind of become a group thing, which has been nice. It's been a lot of fun. I get a lot of group feedback, community feedback. I like that. I'd like to change something about the podcast to include more of that. I don't know how I'll do that, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, people seem to like talking about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I honestly was never like a diehard Star Trek fan. And once I did one of these, I was like, man, I really enjoy talking about it.
Yeah.
It's
addictive.
Let's put a pin in this and save it for the Q&A show. Yeah. We're going to get to that. You guys will have that. I'm going to do my season 7 wrap-up podcast after this one. And then Modi Clay and myself are going to be back with the series wrap-up. Guys, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the journey. We're going to be moving on. We'll get into more details. The show isn't ending. It's just becoming something else. It's like a caterpillar turning into a butterfly, except anti-time backwards because we're going to TOS next. So anyway, go to facebook.com. Support us there. You can go like and comment on this video. You can like us on your favorite podcatcher. Patreon.com/ThePenske Podcast. Couple bucks. You get extra content. We do all kinds of stuff. Modi's been on it, Clay's been on it. We talked about movies. We've talked about Rick and Morty episodes. We do all that stuff.
It made me throw away my Highlander 2 DVD.
He did. He tweeted that at me earlier. Nothing else, just the Highlander. You took it out of the case, which I appreciated.
Well, you know, the case was broken, and Rocky IV needed a new case, so I salvaged the case.
And that reminds me, I still have your Boogie Nights DVD. I'll return that to you. But guys, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Everyone seems very excited to be moving on to a new series. I felt the same. All Good Things kind of made me tear up a little bit and think about how much I love the show, but we're going to get deeper into that in the next episode. So thank you very much for listening. Modi Clay, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Guys, see you next time. And I guess I should wrap this up properly, right? Sky's the limit. See ya.
You want to take that one again?